Tonight we're going to be talking about a couple of things. The main thing, which is the theme of the lesson, is going to be about the return of Jesus Christ, God's Son. And the second thing, but not the main thing, is about making mistakes. Each of us has made mistakes, and obviously that's inevitable. Our lives are full of mistakes and things that happen not according to the plans that we had previously laid out. Some of the mistakes that we'll make in life will be costly, while others we will be able to shake off and recover from rather quickly. After we make each decision in life, it'll either turn out to be the wrong one, and we'll acknowledge it as a mistake, and we'll correct ourselves so that we don't make the mistake again. And I got a personal story I'm going to tell you about a mistake that includes me and Ryan. When I was younger, I'd say I was maybe 4 or 5. Is that how old you are? What did you raise your hand for? Oh, I thought you wanted something. All right. When I was about 4 or 5, which would make Ryan 6 or 7 years old. That was about 50 years ago for Ryan. So we were little kids, and we had this clubhouse that had a upstairs deck on it. So it was about, say, 8 feet off the ground. Ryan had been watching some movie. I'm wanting to think it might have been Home Alone. Anybody ever seen Home Alone? Well, that kid does a lot of little nifty tricks to stay away from the robbers. And Ryan came up with this grand idea to tie a string around his waist, tie it in a knot, and then same string, the other end, put it on my waist, tie it in a knot. And we're upstairs on the clubhouse balcony, 8 feet off the ground. And there's not enough slack in the rope for us to actually touch the ground. After I explain, like, there was a post like this that was holding the rail of the porch of the clubhouse. Ryan jumps off the left side of the post, and I jump off at the same time. Ryan's idea was that when he went down, I would go up. And then when I went down, he would go up like a pulley. So Ryan thought we was going to sit there and have a lot of fun just jumping up and down. What happened was what physics is really going to do, the laws of gravity, is we both just got caught and we hung. Nothing happened. We were just hanging there. And we hung there for a good long time and might have not even lived had the window to our house not been open and our parents heard us screaming. And I was just going to use that as an example of a mistake that I made, trusting in that guy that is your youth minister. But there's a mistake I've made in my life that is the most regrettable one that I have, and we'll get to that later. I didn't even pull up the lesson. It'll be about the return of the King. And the King is Jesus Christ. All right, first slide. What goes up? A man of no mistakes. Jesus lived a life never making a mistake. His life was absolutely perfect. If you're ever in a point in your life that you think that you need a role model, a lot of times when I was young, and I'm sure when you guys are young as well, you'll turn to television and sports and stuff to look for people to follow and try to live your life like them because it's popular and it's cool. But say that you're looking for guidance and you want somebody to model your life after. There's no greater example than Jesus Christ, the Son of God, who never committed one mistake, never sinned. He lived an absolute perfect life. Okay. Jesus' life came to an end after many years of serving the God his Father, and he breathed his last breath on the cross and was placed in a tomb, and a rock was pushed closed, and he laid there till the third day, and he was resurrected. After he was resurrected, we all know that Jesus spent roughly 40 days walking the earth and giving his disciples the last bit of instructions before he ascended into heaven. And ascended means that he basically was lifted into heaven. I'm sure most of you knew that, but maybe some of the youngers didn't. In Acts chapter 1, verses 9 through 11. If anybody wants to turn there, you don't have to because it's on the board. It reads, "And after he had said these things, he was lifted up," talking about Jesus, "he was lifted up while they were looking on, and a cloud received him out of their sight. And as they were gazing intently into the sky, while he was going, behold, two men in white clothing stood beside them." For you lads to leaders, kids, y'all should remember that. So, what goes up must come down. And the next verse, the conclusion to the verse 11 in Acts chapter 1. "These two men, they also said, 'Men of Galilee, why do you stand looking into the sky? This Jesus who has been taken up from you into heaven will come in just the same way you have watched him go into heaven.'" So just as the disciples and the two men watched Jesus float into heaven, one day that we don't know of, he will also come back down. This will be a great day for certain people. "Just as Christ left this earth, he will return. When Christ returns to this earth, he will gather those who belong to him and to his kingdom." John 14, verses 1 through 3. This won't be on the board if anybody wants to turn there. John 14, verses 1 through 3. This is concerning Jesus when he returns and what will happen once he returns. "Let not your hearts be troubled. Believe in God. Believe also in me. In my Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, would I have told you that I go to prepare a place for you? And if I go to prepare a place for you, I will come again and I will take you myself, that where I am, you may be also." So Jesus, when he left, when he ascended into heaven, he was leaving to prepare a place for the people that accepted him and believed in him and did the proper things to become a Christian. And once he returns back, he will take us up to the place that he had prepared. And that will be a great day. However, also, when Jesus comes back to earth, it's not going to be just a great day. It will also be a sad day. When Christ returns, just like there will be souls, just as there will be souls saved in eternity, there will also be souls who are lost and not able to enter the kingdom of heaven. Of all the lives that have existed on earth, there will be hundreds, thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions, and even billions of lives. I can't guarantee that number, but right now we have 7 billion people on the planet, and that's the people that are alive and not yet to be born or that have died. So I'd say it's probably a pretty safe thing to say that there will be millions and even billions of souls that won't inherit the kingdom of heaven. That should be pretty scary. And as a Christian, we should try to reach out and try to make that number smaller if we can. So there will also be a very sad day. In Matthew 24, verses 30 through 31. I don't think this is on the board either. Nope. Matthew 24, verses 30 through 31. "Then will appear in heaven the sign of the Son of Man, and then all the tribes of the earth will mourn. And they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. And he will send out his angels with a loud trumpet call, and they will gather his elect from the four winds, from the end of the heaven, from end of heaven to the other." This day that Jesus is going to come is described in the Bible as a thief. Thief in the night. It's an unknown day. It's not a day that anybody, the Mayans obviously got it wrong. It's not going to be a day that's on the calendar. It's not going to be, you're not going to be told when this day is. You can't find it in the Bible. You can't find it anywhere. The hour and the day that Christ will return is unknown. He could return tomorrow, he could return next week, he could return next month, next year, maybe 100 years. Again, just reiterating that it's unknown. What is important to understand is that at any moment, Christ could return out of the sky just as he left. Matthew 24, verses 36. You don't have to turn, it's on the board. But concerning that day and hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, and even more importantly, this next part, nor the Son, Jesus, but the Father only. So, even the Son of God, the one who's actually going to come from the clouds back to earth and gather the people that is going to be in heaven with him, he doesn't even know. And it's not saying creepy, but it's also, it'd be a little frightening just to know that it's unexpected. The Bible compares Christ's return as a thief. Doesn't seem like you'd compare Christ to a thief, but his return in the Bible is compared to a thief in the night. And that comes from 1 Thessalonians 5 and 2. For you yourselves are fully aware that the day of the Lord will come like a thief in the night. Again, this reference isn't calling the Son of Man a thief. It's just comparing the way that he will return to how a thief operates. When a thief plans to rob a house, they're not going to give up a phone call and say, "Hey, how's it going? I'm coming to your house and I'm going to rob you." That's not how a thief's going to operate. Just as Christ is going to return to this earth, there's not going to be a sign. There's not going to be something like a plain smoke in there that says, "Tomorrow morning at 9, I'm coming." There's not going to be any sign that Christ is to return at any moment. He's going to come, and it's going to happen, and it's going to be unpredictable, and no one will know. So, with that being said, there should be a sense of urgency for those who need to follow Christ. There's nothing more urgent than committing your life to Christ. Knowing that Christ could return at any time makes committing your life to Him more urgent. If you know what it takes to become a Christian and how to be saved for an eternal life in heaven, then choosing to delay that commitment would be the biggest mistake of your life. The Bible gives us several examples of people who realize the sense of urgency. And I tried to pull some of these from Acts because this Devo was supposed to be during before Bible Bowl. So it got postponed for 2 months. The first biblical example of urgency is the conversion of Saul. Y'all should be very familiar with that, those that attend here. Long before Saul became Paul, he was a man who stood against Jesus Christ, and he stood against everything Jesus was. He was out persecuting Christians, even having them put to death. Can anybody remember a certain name that he consented to? Stephen. Very good. All right. Yeah, he had Christians put to death, but when Christ came to him and revealed to him the truth, he immediately changed and was converted. Jesus told Saul in a vision when he was on the road to Damascus that he was going to send someone to him to tell him all that he would be commanded to do. And immediately after he had done what Christ had commanded him to do, he rose up and was baptized. The second biblical example that understood a sense of urgency would be the Ethiopian eunuch. So the Ethiopian eunuch one day was sitting in a chariot and he was reading from the Old Testament, because obviously the New Testament hadn't been written. It was going on. And Philip came by and saw this man that was reading the Bible, and the eunuch asked Philip to explain to him what he was reading. Philip opened his mouth and began to read the scripture and told him the good news about Jesus. And after the news of Christ had been explained to the Ethiopian eunuch, they were traveling down the road, and when they came across water, as all y'all know, the Ethiopian eunuch asked, "There is water. What hinders me from being baptized?" And he realized the sense of urgency, and the eunuch was baptized. The last example I drew up for urgency was the Philippian jailer. This was while Paul and Silas were imprisoned. This is the same guy. Paul is the same guy that also knew the sense of urgency. He was Saul before. So Paul and Silas were in prison, and they converted a jailer who was holding them captive. This comes from Acts chapter 16, verses 31 through 33. They said, which is Paul and Silas, "Believe in the Lord Jesus, and you will be saved, you and your household." And they spoke the word of the Lord to him together with all those who were in his house. And he took them in that very hour of the night and washed their wounds, and immediately he was baptized, he and all of his household. And as I said, we're going to be talking about mistakes, so to learn from mistakes. The mistake I made that one day when Ryan told me to jump will be fine, that was a mistake that I made as a child, but that was not when I said that I made a mistake that I regretted more than any. That wasn't the mistake. The mistake that I truly regret more than any was that I grew up in the church. I believed with all of my heart at a young age that Jesus Christ was the Son of God and that I wanted to be a Christian. And I thought about it, and it always came to the conclusion that I had plenty of time. I would think to myself, maybe next Sunday during the invitation. But when that Sunday would come, I would postpone it and say next Sunday. This went on for months and years and even nearly a decade, which is 10 years. For almost 10 years, I knew what it took to be saved, and I believed with all of my heart, but I never committed my life to Christ. I would always tell myself that I wasn't ready or that there would always be another opportunity. There were always many people in my life that encouraged me to commit my life to Christ. Nearly all of my family, and even Ryan, who tried to kill me, he was very encouraging. And I continued living a life, not being a Christian, until I finally was baptized at the age of 20. That mistake, I truly regret. Waiting when you believe and know what it takes to be saved isn't something to postpone. We aren't guaranteed any amount of time on earth. Jesus will return to this earth, and he will gather those who have been saved through him, through baptism, and have lived faithful Christian lives, and he will take them to heaven. That moment could be, as we said, now, tomorrow, next week, 10 years, 30 years. We don't know. If you know you're making a mistake concerning your salvation and continue to postpone it, never fixing it, tomorrow isn't promised. And if you never learn from mistake, never learn from your mistakes, and you delay your commitment to the Lord, it could be an eternity of regret. And I'm going to conclude with a verse. Comes from 2 Corinthians 6:2. For he says, "In a favorable time I listened to you, and in the day of salvation I have helped you. Behold, now is a favorable time. Behold, now is the day of salvation." So, the Lord will return, just as he left, and he will gather those who have committed their lives to him. If there is anyone who needs to respond or anything needs to be done, come forward as Connor leads us in the invitation song.
Sing the first and last verse.